Howdy, friends. Welcome back to Bloody Bizarre.
My name's Emma.
I'm Sarah.
We're in Emma's house today, sans babies. No babies or children here.
But double dogs.
Double dogs.
Mm.
Double dogs. They're
both wagging their tails.
You can just see the tails.
Yeah.
Yeah, welcome back. Thanks for tuning back in. Hope you enjoyed last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Hope you've been engaging with us over on the gram.
Yep, a few people have.
Okay.
Oh, it's really going to annoy me. There was something that I was going to say at the top of this episode that I was like, oh, yep, I need to mention that. And I did not write it down because it's not my week to speak. So I don't like write anything down.
You just show up.
Yeah, I literally show up and say, make me a coffee.
Yeah.
And actually, I looked at the message after and it said, ple make me coffee.
It said, ple to make me coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know what it was, but. If I've forgotten to say something, I'm sorry. I'll remember eventually, probably in like 6 months' time.
Was it some kind of shout out to someone?
I feel like it might have been, yeah. Like somebody might have. Oh, I've got it. Uh huh. Okay.
Sarah also had a transfusion like yesterday.
Infusion
a couple of days ago. And so it's, she's got energy to spare.
I'm better.
It's kind of overwhelming.
I'm all better. Okay, get this. I was going to message you when I found this out, but I saved it.
So, like, it's the energy and the volume and stuff, it's, like, hitting me, like, I feel like I need to go, like.
I'm sorry. I'm not usually like that.
Look.
I guess I've had low iron for like a year, so
yeah.
I'm like all of a sudden my iron levels are normal.
Yeah,
it's made me superhuman.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. Go.
Okay. So, thank you. Big thank you to listener Kindle who messaged me about this. Do you remember the Sahara Sue episode?
Yes.
Yes. And how we were saying it's really sad that she was just, you know, this anonymous girl that they didn't know who she was. They have identified her.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So
when did they do that?
Okay.
I guess you're going to tell me.
Yes.
So Sahara Sue was the one in Las Vegas.
Yes. So Sahara Sue, I did a full episode on her. Her body was, she was an unknown, Jane Doe who was found in a Las Vegas parking lot murdered in 1979 and nobody knew who she was. And it was, she looked very young. So it was potential that she was like actually a child. Nobody came forward having known her, but she did have some things that were quite, what's the word?
Identifying?
Yeah, she had some identifying features. So she had the full set of dentures, which is very unusual for a young person. So it was odd that nobody had come forward. So through DNA testing, they were able to confirm that Sahara Sue is actually Gwen Marie Story. She was a young woman from Cincinnati, Ohio. She was traveling to look for her biological father.
Mm.
Yeah. When this happened, she was making her way to California with two male friends, but obviously she did not make it to California because she was killed in Las Vegas. Now the,
she was so close.
So close, I know, yep. Now, obviously, this has only happened recently, so from here further investigation can happen, but now that they've got this, they know who she is, this obviously means, like, it's opened so many leads because she was traveling with these two guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they've talked to them or if, you know, that's obviously something they're going to do. But, yeah, the former Clark County coroner, he has said there's more than one person who knows what happened to her. So I think they're onto something.
How old was she?
19, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, she was 19.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, thanks, thanks Kindle, for bringing that to my attention because I didn't know that. And it's one that I do think – like I used to think about it quite a lot. So, yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
If there's any other updates on any cases that we've done, don't assume that we are following them. Please let us know.
Yeah, please do let us know.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Good one. All right. Well, I'm going to get started on my story.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Was that your neck?
Yeah.
Fucking hell. That was a good coffee.
I know. I stirred it with a spoon and then I tasted the spoon and I was like.
It's because I have sugar in it.
Yeah. Today, I'm going to stay local.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you about a violent criminal who terrorized Perth, Western Australia, between September 1958 and August 1963.
Ooh.
Today, I'm telling you about the last person to be executed in Western Australia, the Nedlands monster, Eric Edgar Cook.
Ooh, okay, yep.
Now, my sources today are Wikipedia, a piece by Paul Giannone from the School of Media, Culture and Creative Arts at Curtin University, ABCnews.com article by Tracy Stewart, and an allthat'sinteresting.com article by Danielle Tinning. So let's start with Cook's early life. He was born on the 25th of February 1931 in Victoria Park, Perth. Eric was the eldest of three children, and I want to just pause here to mention that this is not the first murderous eldest child that we've discussed. For those who aren't aware, Sarah is the eldest of our family.
Most responsible.
Yeah. Well,
it's a heavy burden.
I'm not suggesting anything. It's just important, I think, to note.
Mm-hmm.
Eric was born with a cleft palate and lip. He underwent two surgeries to correct this, one at 3 months and another at 3.5 years, I think it was. I haven't put the end of that on there, but I think it was 3.5 years. The operations were not totally successful.
I was going to say, I feel like in the 1930s, it wouldn't be the kind of surgeries that they have now.
So little Eric had a slight facial deformity and a bit of a speech impairment as a result.
Mm-hmm.
As you can imagine, this made him the target of bullying in school.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty good at subjects that required retentive memory and manual dexterity, but he wasn't very good at other subjects. But those ones. So I guess in today, like today's schooling, he probably would have been streamlined into like a trade.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was pretty good at that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Cook was expelled from Subiaco State School for stealing money from a teacher's purse at the age of six.
Six?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really sad.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you about his home life, and that kind of gives an idea of why he was...
Oh, yeah, no, I'm more saying like that that's overly harsh for a six-year-old.
Oh, to be expelled, yeah.
Yeah, and like at six, they don't really have the full concept of like... I remember why stealing is, you know.
I was in a fish and chip shop with Dad when I was probably about six, and these two girls were at the counter and they were ordering, and one of them dropped $2, and I just looked at her, picked it up, and put it in my pocket while looking at her.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Like I did, I was just like, I mean, I must have known that was wrong. You don't just
little kids; they just don't have the like the concept of a lot of things.
Fucking dumb. He was then transferred to Newcastle Street Infant School. He was then, again, the target of bullying. He continued to be bullied at every school that he attended, including Highgate Primary School, Forest Street Primary School, and Newcastle Street Junior Technical School. His home life was unhappy too. So his mother and father only married because his mother, Christine, was pregnant, and it was very obvious that the pair didn't really love each other. Eric's father, Vivian...
It's our nan's name.
Yeah. He was a violent alcoholic, and he would regularly beat the family. Eric himself would often be beaten for trying to protect his mother.
Oh, God, that's so sad.
Christine.
This poor kid, he's just got like, I know he becomes a monster, but at this point he's just got no escape from being a victim.
Christine would sometimes sleep in the staff room at her job at the Como Hotel to avoid Vivian. Likewise, Eric would walk the streets or sleep under houses to escape his father's violence. This led to Eric being placed in orphanages or foster homes on a few occasions. Eric was also very accident prone, so much so that it was later questioned whether some of his, quote, accidents were actually deliberate and were like manifestations of suicidal tendencies or ideations.
Yeah, a bit of like self-harming behavior.
Yeah. He was frequently hospitalized. He had head injuries to the point of suspected brain damage. He had frequent headaches to the point of blackout, and he was even admitted to an asylum for a period of time.
As a child?
Yeah.
Wow.
Cook left school at the age of 14 to work as a delivery boy for Central Provision Stores in order to support the family. He would give his weekly wages to his mother, who, because she couldn't fully support the family with the money she earned from cooking and cleaning. I don't know what Vivian was doing at this time. Just loafing off.
Being a dick.
Deadbeat, yeah. Many of Cook's jobs put him in hospital because of his accident proneness. So at a job in the factory... in the factory of Harris, Scarfe and Sandover, he was hospitalised after being hit in the face by a winch. At 16, he worked as a hammer boy in the blacksmith section of a workshop at Midland Junction. At this job, he suffered second-degree burns to his face from steam. He jarred his right hand and injured his left thumb. So he just, like, everywhere he went, but also if he's got, like, mild brain damage, maybe he's just, like, clumsy.
Yeah, he's, like, predisposed to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Let's talk about Eric's early crimes. So precursors, but not yet violent. Starting at
precursors on precursors.
Yeah. Starting at 17, Cook spent his nights involved in petty crimes, vandalism, and arson. Wouldn't necessarily call arson petty.
Yeah.
I think that's like kind of getting up there. He would later serve 18 months in jail for burning down a church because he was rejected in a choir audition. Later, Cook would sneak into houses and steal whatever he found valuable. These crimes escalated to damaging clothing and furniture in acts of vengeance. He'd cut out newspaper accounts of his crimes to impress his acquaintances, probably in an attempt to, like, impress them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he never really had many friends.
No, I was going to say, if he's been rejected by his peers his whole life, then if he finds this way that people...
To gain a bit of respect or whatever. On the 12th of March 1949, police finally caught up with Cook and found evidence at his grandmother's house where he was living. Cook's fingerprints were matched to those found in other open cases. So Cook was sentenced to 3 years in prison after being arrested for arson and vandalism. He was convicted on 2 charges of stealing, 7 of breaking and entering, and 4 of arson. He left a lot of fingerprints and like easy clues for detectives at the scene of the crime, and he said that this taught him to be more careful in his future crimes and like wear gloves and shit like that.
That's great.
As an adult, Eric was described as, quote, a short, slight man with dark wavy hair and a twisted mouth.
That's not very nice.
I've seen a couple of photos
of him. He had a literal like deformity. He can't help that.
Yeah, I've seen a few photos of him and he looks so different in each photo I've seen of him. He's got a really interesting face though.
Eric
Edgar Cook with an E.
Oh, I've seen this guy before. He looks super different in
those photos. I know. There's like a few different photos of him and in each one he looks like a different person.
Mm.
It's like the Golden State Killer, Joseph DeAngelo, how he looks so different in all the photos of him. Anyway, at the age of 21, Cook joined the Australian Army, but he was discharged 3 months later after it was discovered that before enlisting, he had that juvenile record. During his training, though, he was quickly promoted to Lance Corporal and was taught to handle firearms.
I feel like maybe that's something they should have checked before handing him a gun.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you? Maybe they do now, but maybe not. Who knows?
I mean,
yeah. At the age of 22 in 1953, Eric Edgar Cook married. Can you guess the name of this lady?
Erica.
No. He married Sarah.
Oh.
He married Sarah Levin, a 19-year-old waitress whom Cook had been seeing.
She sounds great.
Okay. The pair would go on to have 7 children.
Oh, no, no, no.
4 boys and 3 girls. During the 1950s and early 1960s, people in Australia frequently left their cars unlocked and often even with keys in the ignition. Cook found it, obviously, very easy to steal cars. And at night, sometimes he even would steal vehicles and then return them before the morning and the people wouldn't even be aware that he'd taken the car.
Well, that's not stealing, that's borrowing.
Borrowing. I bet that's what he said.
Yeah. I guess technically he stole the fuel.
Maybe he filled it up.
Yeah, he might have filled it back up.
Maybe he followed like rental car rules.
Yeah.
Full to full.
Yeah.
In September 1955, after crashing a car and requiring hospitalisation, Cook was sentenced to 2 years hard labour on a charge of unlawful use of a motor vehicle. He was ultimately released from Fremantle Prison just prior to Christmas the following year. After his release, he took to wearing gloves while committing crimes in order to avoid leaving his fingerprints, which had provided evidence for his prior breaking and entering convictions.
Mm-hmm.
And then almost out of nowhere, while still living with, like a family life, Eric Edgar Cook escalated from break-ins and theft to brutal and merciless killings.
Yeah, but not out of nowhere because he spent 2 years in Fremantle Prison with hard criminals.
But I think you've got to be a sort, certain sort of person to be to commit violent crimes.
Absolutely, you do. But I would say that that was probably a big factor in like the rapid escalation.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe he saw some shit.
Saw some shit, experienced some shit.
Yeah.
Had people tell him stuff.
Yeah. So he had no set MO, killing seemingly at random, and his method of killing also really varied as well. So Cook's behaviour was strange and inconsistent for a killer, which definitely threw the police off the scent. But it remains unknown if it was an... Is this someone over there?
No, it's just someone drove past.
Oh, my God. Into him. It's a road patchy. People are allowed to drive on it. That's where they're supposed to drive.
Not out the front of your house. Find another way to get to your house.
Not past me. So, yeah, it's not known if it was intentional that he was doing this, like, these random MOs and, like, switching it up and all that kind of stuff. Police were working hard to catch the man who'd been terrorizing Perth. During their investigation, more than 30,000 males aged over 12 were fingerprinted, and more than 60,000 .22 rifles, the type Cook used in some of his murders, spoiler, were located and test fired. So they were doing a lot of kind of canvassing.
Yeah.
I think this was the first crime. This was really difficult to research because...
Because it was the olden days.
Yeah, but also, like, the way that everyone had written it was fucking dumb. At one point, I was just searching Eric Edgar Cook murder timeline, and, like, I couldn't figure out which one was his first murder. I had to look at the dates that they were saying and, like, try and figure it out myself.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think this is the first murder.
Okay.
So in 1959, a young woman from South Perth who worked as a beautician was stabbed to death. After murdering her, the offender, Eric Cooley, got a lemonade from the fridge, sat on her veranda and drank it.
Wait, so he broke into her house and stabbed her?
Yeah.
Was there any connection? Did he know her?
He didn't know her at all.
It was just a completely random break and murdered her.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Stabbed her to death.
Whoa.
This crime was only linked to Cook after he was arrested for other crimes. So they didn't even know, like, he wasn't even on their radar for this one when they'd arrested him for other murders.
What was her name?
I'm going to tell you in a second. That's the other thing. No one was named. And then I found this list of names that weren't linked to the crime. So I'm not sure, pardon me, what her name was, but I'm going to tell you the names of everyone that he murdered.
Yeah, okay.
His next crime, in the early hours of the 27th of January 1963, so that's a good, like, what, four years later?
Yeah.
One, two, three, yeah. So embarrassing having a podcast and just exposing how stupid you are.
Like, oh, yeah, and, like, dumb comments that you make.
Yeah.
Like, I made a comment about, we don't have a Facebook because we're not 50, in an episode right at the start. And now I'm like, that is so rude. What a rude girl that I said that.
I was like, yeah.
No, you said you were like, you probably alienated a few people there.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, oh, sorry. We're cool or something like that.
Oh.
Yeah,
embarrassing. Should we pack up the
pod? Should we just quit?
Yeah. Mid-story.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Yeah, it's been a great
that's
ride.
That's the end of the podcast. So, yes, early hours of 27th of January 1963, a few years after the other crime, a series of random shootings with a .22 rifle occurred in the suburbs of Perth. The victims were a couple who were wounded in a parked car at Cottesloe, a male accountant fatally wounded by a single shot to the head while asleep in a flat nearby, an 18-year-old student killed by a single bullet to the head while sleeping on the veranda of a boarding house in Nedlands, and a retired grocer who was similarly murdered when answering the bell of his front door in the next street.
Did this all happen on the same day, or was it...
Yes, in the early hours of 27th of January.
So he just went around...
On a spree. Yeah, like there was the people that were in the parked car, the guy that was inside his house, the guy that was asleep in the front of his house. He rang a doorbell and just shot the guy that answered.
Yeah, and just a random person.
Yeah, there was no like linking to him in any of this.
Yeah.
Now, this next one is the worst one. Okay. So on 16th of February 1963, so just, you know, almost a month after, a female social worker was strangled in West Perth. This crime was particularly violent and a departure for Cook because the victim, she was strangled to death with the cord from a bedside lamp, after which Cook raped the corpse, disrobed and dragged it to a neighbor's lawn, and then sexually penetrated it with an empty whiskey bottle.
What the fuck?
He then left the whiskey bottle cradled in the victim's arms to kind of like make it look like she'd like, you know, drank herself to death or whatever. Again, this crime actually wasn't linked to Cook until after police had apprehended him, which happened the same year in August when an 18-year-old student was killed by a single shot to the head while babysitting in Dalkeith.
God, traumatized for life.
So it was for that crime that Cook was captured by police. So what he did was he left, I think it was a knife that he'd left, or no, it was a gun, I think, that he left it in the bush next to her house, right? The police found it, but they didn't announce that they'd found it. They then took that gun and replaced it with a dud gun that was exactly the same, like a replica that couldn't fire.
Yeah.
And then they just monitored the bush, and then sure enough, Cook came back and grabbed that weapon and they arrested him. So despite initially denying any involvement in any crimes, it didn't take long for Cook to break and confess to everything after one of the detectives, Max Baker, said to him, quote, "Cookie, you're going to hang, you know. There's no doubt about it. You got a wife and kids. Think of them. And then think about whether you're going to be dragged to the gallows like a mongrel dog or you're going to go there like a man."
Oh.
And that did it.
And he was like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, he got me. Yeah. He offloaded 22 violent crimes to police, including 8 murders and 14 attempted killings. So he did even more than I mentioned.
Yeah.
With no clear motive for his crimes, all that Cook could offer up as an explanation for his actions was that he wanted to hurt people. Now, sometimes it's brought up that it might not be a coincidence that Cook's murders all took place in really affluent suburbs.
Yeah. It's that kind of golden triangle sort of area again.
So maybe jealousy played a part.
Were those areas affluent at that time? Because I've heard that places like Cottesloe and stuff like that weren't particularly...
I think they were fine. I think they were at this time, because this is the 60s now.
Okay.
So I think, yeah, I think they were.
Maybe just not the insane level of wealth that...
Correct, yeah.
...we have now.
Yes.
It's just more...
Now it's like... Whatever. Yeah, now it's like the houses are passed down through generations to kids with fucking silver... If you live in those areas, I'm sure that you work hard for your money.
You're not the person we have beef with.
No, you in particular. Your neighbours, on the other hand. Okay, so in his detailed confessions, Cook admitted to more than 250 break-ins and burglaries, and he recounted them with, they said, remarkable detail. On one occasion, he even recalled the number and denominations of the coins he'd stolen from each location.
You said he had a really good memory for those kind of...
Yeah.
What an absolute menace.
Yeah. Cook's murder victims were Nina or Penny Berkman, Gillian McPherson Brewer, John Lindsay Sturkey, George Ormond Walmsley, Rosemary Anderson, Constance Lucy Madrill, and Shirley Martha McLeod. Another victim, Brian Vincent Weir, ultimately died as a result of permanent injury 3 years after having been shot by Cook. Two of the murders, the deaths of Gillian Brewer and Rosemary Anderson, those were the stabbing and the strangulation, they were actually attributed to other men, Daryl Beamish and John Button, respectively. They were wrongfully convicted of those crimes, those two men.
Oh, so once this guy confessed, they were released?
No. So despite Cook's 1963 confession, Beamish served 15 years, while Button was sentenced to 10 years and ended up serving 5.
So they didn't just immediately let them out?
They didn't immediately, because they thought Cook was lying.
Oh, okay.
Despite Cook telling them things that only someone that committed the crime would know.
I bet they were just kind of like...
We're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We couldn't be wrong.
In 2002, the Court of Criminal Appeal quashed Button's conviction. Button's success opened the way for an appeal by Beamish, who was acquitted in 2005.
2005?
Correct.
When did this crime take place? Like the 60s?
63.
God, they're lucky he was still alive.
So I guess they mustn't have been arrested straight away for those crimes. Or no, unless they were like let free... Yeah, they must have been let free.
That happens. Yeah, where they let them out of jail, but they're not technically like acquitted of
correct,
the crime.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. In both cases, the appeal judges found that the murders had most likely been committed by Cook. On June 2nd, 2011, Beamish was granted $425,000 Australian dollars ex gratia payment by the Western Australian government. But still, like an ex gratia payment, that means the government were like, well, we didn't do anything wrong, but we'll pay you.
Yeah.
Cook stood trial in November of 1963 in the Supreme Court of Western Australia. He pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. Cook's lawyers actually claimed he had schizophrenia, but this claim was dismissed after the director of the state mental health services testified that he was sane. The state, however, wouldn't allow an independent psychiatric specialist to examine Cook.
Okay.
So they were like, our guy said he's fine. We're not letting you examine him again. After a 3-day trial, Cook was convicted of willful murder. On November 27th, 1963, Cook was sentenced to death by hanging for the murder of John Lindsay Sturkey. So he was only tried for one murder. The death sentence having been imposed, his other charges were held in abeyance, which means basically they're like kind of put on ice. You can't sentence someone higher than the death penalty. So yep. Essentially it's like, well, that's been done, so we don't need to sentence him for all the other crimes that he's committed.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I guess that makes sense fiscally, but
yeah.
It might be a bit sad for the families of the...
Well, he was found guilty on that murder. I'm not sure. Maybe he was found guilty for all... Maybe he was tried for all the murders.
I guess the outcome is the same.
Yeah, yeah. Despite having grounds to appeal... Cook ordered his lawyers not to apply, claiming that he deserved to pay for what he'd done.
Yeah, you do.
I reckon that detective really had an effect on him.
Yeah, well, it sounds like he didn't have much of a father figure, so maybe...
Yeah, yeah.
He just needed a man to, like, talk some sense into him.
Words mean more when they're spoken by a male.
Well, you know, I think some men, they actually do need a man to
talk
agree. To them.
Yeah, of course they do. Some other things that happened in 1963, just for... fun. US President John F. Kennedy was assassinated.
Oof.
Martin Luther King delivered his I Have a Dream speech.
Oof.
The audacious Great Train Robbery was carried out in the UK. And Beatlemania began to sweep the world.
A dramatic time.
Yeah, I know.
My parents grew up in a very...
We say that, but then look at what we're growing up through.
Oh, yeah, but ours is just like fucking fucked, dark yeah. and depressing.
Yeah. Cook was hanged at 8 a.m. on 26 October 1964 in Fremantle Prison, 11 months after being sentenced. 10 minutes before the sentence was carried out... Okay, I'm going to have to mention this now because we're not going to stop laughing. Okay, so Cook was hanged in Fremantle Prison. Now, Fremantle Prison is a prison here in WA that is now open to the public. It's no longer serving as a prison, and so there's like tours that
go around. It's very like touristy now.
It's very touristy. You can walk around the prison. They take you into all the cells and mm-hmm. stuff, and like there's people that say it's haunted, but they run these like torchlight tours. And so Sarah, I, and our younger sister Beck went on one of these torchlight tours. Now we were wandering around the grounds, and then they took us to the gallows. So we were actually stood where Eric Edgar Cook was actually hanged. And then we're just standing there, and then as we're leaving, Sarah tells us that she has left her own little ghost in there because she fluffed. Sarah did a fart in the gallows where multiple people had lost their lives. So disrespectful. Sarah decided to make a ghost.
I didn't decide. It was, look, we were on this tour and we were with a big group of people, and that was my opportunity because I was the last one out. So it was the only place that I could do it.
So anyway, okay, back to this. Fuck, this man lost his life. He took many lives too.
Yeah, I don't care about him.
Okay. Well, obviously, you made that clear on the tour. 10 minutes before the sentence was carried out, Cook swore in the Bible that he'd killed Brewer and Anderson, those two women, claims which had previously been rejected because those other two guys had already been arrested for the murders. But he swore it, you know, just before he was hanged.
That he did it.
He did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cook was the last person to be hanged in the state of Western Australia. He was buried in Fremantle Cemetery above the remains of child killer Martha Rendell, who in 1909 was the last woman to be hanged in Fremantle Prison.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
There are a number of books and miniseries dedicated to the crimes of Eric Edgar Cook, which I didn't know about, but the most recent is in November 2020. Stan released an original four-part docuseries called After the Night, which covers the story of Cook's murders. I have not watched it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Once we kick Tills out of the room, I can start watching shows again. I might actually watch that.
Yeah.
Add that to my watch list.
Yeah. And that is the story of the last man to be hanged in Western Australia, Eric Edgar Cook. Oh, and a little personal bit of information. Dad used to teach with the son of the lead detective.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The guy who talked some sense into
it. I don't think it was him, but another detective on the case.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's Perth for you.
It is Perth.
So typically Perth. Yeah. Anyone who is not familiar with Perth, it's like a big capital city, but everyone says it's like a small country town because if you are from Perth, there's like...
like 2 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, I know your cousin's friend or...
yeah. Oh, I taught with... I worked with your mum in this...
yeah.
Whatever. So, yeah.
Very sad for him as a child, but it sounds like he turned into a complete piece of shit, so...
yeah, well, that's what happens when children are treated that way.
Yeah. In not prioritised. Yep. Not given what they need.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't like children as much as the next person, but...
I like children.
Okay. As much as the person after you. But if you have them, then you have to take care of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so to finish on a high note.
As we like to do.
Yep. What are you doing next week?
Oh, I'm not sure because I started doing one that is on my list to do and I just think that I might actually put it on pause and do something else because so there's a video that accompanies it and I watched the video.
Yeah.
And it just was it was upsetting. And so now researching it, I'm like, it's very emotionally taxing and so I might just take a break from that one, do another one and I'll come back to that one.
Okay. Long explanation, did not ask for that, but that's okay. Yeah. Well, the one after that of mine is going to be really gross and heavy, so.
Okay. So, do what you want. Yeah.
All right. Well, when this drops, I'll be on my way home from a good camp, a camping session. Mm-hmm. I'm on my annual camp for the year. And it's the best weekend of the year, and no one can tell me otherwise. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.